Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Movie Geeks United. Tonight, he's performed breathtaking stunts for films like Shooter, Rush Hour 3, The Day After Tomorrow, and the latest Indiana Jones film, stuntman extraordinaire Jeff Galpin. Plus, he's the editor of action classics like Predator, Rambo First Blood Part 2, The Last Boy Scout, and the films of Brett Ratner. And he makes his featured directorial debut with next week's Dane Cook-Jessica Alba rom-com, Good Luck Chuck, Mr. Mark Helfrich. Plus, hear all about the upcoming two-hour tribute to our finest character actors. Now get ready. It's time to get your geek on. Here are your hosts for Movie Geeks United, Jamie, Chris, and Jerry.
Movie Geeks United is on the air. How's everybody doing out there? This is your co-host Jamie, and fellow co-host Jerry and Chris are here with us too. Hey guys.
Hey, what's up?
What up, bitches?
You always have an original way to greet the audience every show. How long do you sit and think about that before?
Well, that just came to me. I like the fact that you can refer to "what up, bitches" as an original statement.
I do. I mean, when are you going on that beer run?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm actually going to go in a minute.
We got to start the show right off the bat here. We're really excited to speak to our first guest this evening. His breathtaking work can be seen in over 80 high-profile films, including Shooter, Rush Hour 3, Deep Impact, The Day After Tomorrow, Runaway Jury, Deja Vu, and The Dukes of Hazzard. He's also contributed to 12 films that are currently awaiting release, including the latest film from director David Fincher and the fourth installment of Indiana Jones. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure to welcome to the show stuntman extraordinaire Jeff Galpin. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, man. How are you doing?
Hey, Jeff. I know you're real busy. You're on the set, and you're about to have to go into shooting again, so we appreciate you taking the time out with us.
Yeah, we're getting ready to do a big gladiator fight, and I'm about to get killed for the 50th time today.
It never gets old.
No, man.
What film are you working on tonight?
Working on a little film in... called Hunting and Fishing. It's going to be a spoof on the movie 300, so it's quite fun. It's not your 300, but it's a lot like it. It looks the same. It's just a lot different.
Yeah. Those movies are always a lot of fun. I know that I had a pretty boring Monday at work, but hearing about your days at work is something else. How did you fall into this line of work? Is there specialty training involved, or?
I fell into it strictly by accident. I was I originally was a policeman, and I got into it because I was at the time in going to college. I was a narc, really, in college, and I was going to be a veterinarian. I got into it working animals, so I started doing animal attacks with lions and tigers and different animals like that, and then later fell into the stunt business. I started on a movie called Undercover Blues with Dennis Quaid and Kathleen Turner.
Oh, yeah.
And we had 12 alligators in the scene. And then the next one I did was Interview with a Vampire. And we had thousands of animals, you know, thousands of spiders and roaches and cougars and alligators. And, you know, the next one we did was Interview with, create them all now, Hard Target with Van Damme with some rattlesnakes. And then just kind of worked myself into the film industry with the stunts.
Oh, wow.
And about 1994 got started, and to this day I've done probably close to 165 films altogether, although the IMDb website doesn't show them all. So close to about 165 now.
Wow.
It's got to be a crazy kind of existence, doing that many films, and I'm sure you're traveling quite a lot. What is that like? You get a phone call and you show up a day or two later on set, what is the
basically? You get a phone call from one of the guys you've met on another show who either liked the way you work, liked your ethics, liked your abilities, and you know you get a phone call say tonight and say, hey, what are you doing in the morning? And I'm not doing anything tomorrow morning. Well, get ready, you're getting on a flight tomorrow morning, and you're going to Connecticut, or you're going to California, you know, India or Thailand or wherever.
What's kind of the most exciting production you've been a part of?
Recently, Rush Hour 3 and the new Indy 4 were pretty awesome movies to be on, just because what they are.
Oh yeah.
But you know, sometimes the biggest ones aren't always the funnest ones. Some of the smaller shows that go straight to DVD are for a stuntman a lot more fun because there's a lot more action.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, a lot more car flips on low-budget shows than sometimes on the bigger ones.
Right.
So it just all depends. Every show is good in its own way, and some are absolutely horrible, but for the most part, it's a really fun job, man.
Hey, what did you do on Rush Hour 3? I saw that last weekend. What did you do on that one?
There were some scenes where Jackie Chan was running after, Kenji was the character.
Oh, okay, so
and
like in the beginning,
running.
Like downtown Los Angeles?
The very beginning when the cars were sliding.
Okay, wow, okay.
The interstate and
you were
climbing
busy.
Down the building and some of that good stuff.
Yeah.
Now,
I
know
it takes a week to film.
I know you're pressed for time, but this is a big movie. It had to have been exciting to get a call to work on Indiana Jones. Just the nature of those films, they're classic films. I know it's a very secretive production. Is there anything that you can tell us about that experience?
It's the same stunt coordinator on the show. The guy in charge of the stunts was the same coordinator from the Casino Royale movie.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can imagine the type of action that's going to be on it. I don't know how much at liberty I am to say, and with confidentiality agreements and all you have to sign when you walk in these productions, I really don't want to say much, but it's really a lot of action. It's really a lot of fun. There was, I believe, 50 stuntmen working each day for 10 days when I was on it.
Mm.
We were in Connecticut. They go to Hawaii. I think they're going to hit New Mexico, California, a couple different states.
And I know it has you down as a stunt driver.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there was
student,
a chase involved
a stunt,
in that.
Yeah, I was a stunt student, a stunt teacher, a stunt driver, a pedestrian. When you're what they call an ND stunt, non-descriptive stunt person, they use you all over. They'll put a beard and mustache on you in one scene and take the mustache off this scene and put a beard, gray beard on you next time and cut your hair,
exciting.
Dye your hair, shave your head.
Did you have any experiences with Harrison Ford or Spielberg at all?
I did a few scenes with Harrison. Austin says in the library, and you'll see that. And Spielberg was, quite a nice guy, really easy to work with. When you meet these people for the first time, sometimes they're not what you think they are. But I've met Spielberg several times and never had any problems working with the man. He's actually fun to work with.
Yeah.
Only on the Indiana Jones movie could there be a scene in a library that calls for a stuntman.
Yeah, I know.
Well, just watch. That's all I'll tell you. There's probably 50 stuntmen in the library.
I have faith.
So.
Now, I know that you're from and you still reside in New Orleans.
Sure.
How are things in New Orleans?
It's still pretty messed up here. It's going to take probably 10 to 15 years before I get back. I mean, there's neighborhoods that are no longer in existence and never will be. It's a real different animal around here nowadays. It's a whole different crowd.
Well, I know in terms of film production, they're starting to bring in a lot of film productions there. I know Deja Vu was pretty soon after Katrina and the new Brad Pitt film that you worked on.
Yeah, the funny part was we did Roadhouse 2. I'm in that one. We filmed. They were actually prepping the show right when the hurricane hit, and I had to ride a boat to the hotel to get the producers' clothes and stuff because they wouldn't allow them back into New Orleans. And I'm a former cop, so they kind of let me get in there and get all the producers' clothes for them. So we did that one right during the hurricane. I had a TV show going in Hawaii at the same time as the hurricane hit. So
right.
Wow.
And then Deja Vu came, and if you watch Deja Vu, there's a scene where he goes to the Ninth Ward, he says, in the movie, and it's pretty much what it looked like. The house they walk in is actually off the foundation and in the street. Mm-hmm. Pretty messed up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming, you calling in to join
us
tonight.
Thank you.
I know you got to get back on set, but please join us sometime in the future and spend a little bit more time with us whenever you can.
Yeah, man, I'd love to. Like I said, the movie sets get kind of crazy. I'm on the show for another week or so, and, we're fighting and killing guys and doing some really funny stuff. These are same producers that did Epic Movie, and it's going to be similar to that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's with a 300 flair,
You've got, like, 12 current projects or films that haven't been released yet that you've worked on or are in the process of working on. It's amazing.
Right.
That's you're a busy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stay pretty busy. A couple series, I'm carried on a couple series, so I go in on some different stunts and
Kayville as well, correct?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Kayville, the New Orleans show.
Kayville, yeah, that's going to be a fantastic show. In fact, I just got a call 15 minutes ago to do some work next Friday. So
oh, wow.
it's pretty wild.
Congratulations.
But, Thank you.
Well, thank you.
It's better
so
than
much.
A desk job, you know.
Yeah.
I believe me, I can relate to that. But
yes,
thanks so much for joining us, and please come back to us sometime in the near future if you would.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Invite me anytime, and I'd love to do it.
Thank you, man. That is stuntman extraordinaire Jeff Galpin. We had a very limited amount of time with him because he called me about 20 minutes ago and said, I have to be back in battle in 20 minutes. So we had a half hour segment all written out and ready to go with him, but we didn't want to get him in trouble with the crew there, so we let him go. But exciting news about Indiana Jones. We got a little kernel of information about it.
Well, if it's going to buy the same stunt guy from Casino Royale, this movie's going to be action packed.
Oh yeah, I mean you would expect nothing less.
Yeah, you expect nothing less, and you got to remember, like I don't know if you guys remember the making of specials for like the first Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
And at the time, just some of those things were just, and they still are. I don't care what anyone says; they're incredible still. Some of the stunts that were done in that film. So you can only imagine for part four what they have up their sleeves. I mean,
and the library. I think that's probably, where was it, Harvard in Connecticut?
I think so.
Because I know they were shooting there, and there was a chase scene, because I've seen video footage of Harrison Ford riding on a motorcycle with Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, that's right.
Through Harvard. I think that's probably what we're looking at. we're trying to get as many scoops as we can and piece them together like some kind of elaborate puzzle, but a little bit at a time. We'll get it going. But a very exciting interview. We'll have him back in the next week, 2 weeks, to talk more in depth about his experiences on films. He's worked on. He was a stunt rigger on Jackass 2, and
that's quite a film to be a stunt rigger for.
So there's lots to talk about with Jeff Galpin, and we'll have him back on in the near future. So Chris, you just got done watching Inland Empire, didn't you?
Yeah, I just finished watching it like 10 to, well, maybe 15, 20 minutes ago.
Can you process it right now, or?
No,
I can't process it after 6 months.
No, honestly, like, I was thinking, like, I mean, if someone was to walk up and ask me, you know, if you guys were to ask me, did you like Inland Empire, that's kind of the same thing as, like, if you see someone take a puzzle box and dump it out onto the table, and then you say to them, hey, is that a fun puzzle?
Like, I couldn't agree more.
It's kind of the same thing. And honestly, I think anyone that walks out of that movie or finishes watching it and says that they understand it fully and they really get it is not only a liar, but a total asshole.
Yeah, because I wrote something about it after I saw it, and I said, the first thing I said is, don't expect this to make any sense, because I don't know what I've just seen.
No, but the one thing I will say is that I probably enjoyed watching it less than any other Lynch movie I've seen. It's probably the least enjoyable movie to watch of his that I've ever seen.
Really?
How much of that has to do with, you know, we get into David Lynch movies, first and foremost, the first thing that hits us is the aesthetic quality. How much of it has to do with that being shot on DV?
Very little. He does the best he can, and in fact, that's one of the things that you can come away from the movie with, is thinking he really does as much as you possibly can with that medium, with that, you know, particular type of, you know, camera, that kind of shooting.
Does it work in favor of the material?
The material, you know, you're using that term very loosely there.
Yeah, Jamie.
I'm singing on Saturday, so.
Well, you know, I would recommend, it's a 3-hour movie, there's 24 hours in a day. I would recommend, you know, watching it the entire 8 times.
Yeah.
And then you probably, my guess is, still will not be able to get much from it.
I'm pretty sure if I watch Inland Empire.
I got the impression there is a story there to be told. There is something going on. I didn't get anything from it watching it. I didn't even get any broad themes or anything like that from watching it, to be perfectly honest.
Well, it seems to have been put together in kind of a, it's like the equivalent of brainstorming almost, because he'd be inspired to add something else the next day, and it was really on the spot scripting, and he didn't know why these ideas were coming to him, but he was hoping that they would eventually make sense to him as a whole.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to him, it does. For him, it makes sense as a whole.
Well, yeah, for him it does. I mean, for the rest of us, yeah, I watched it back in January, and after speaking to you last night, I ordered it on Amazon.
Right.
So I need to watch it a couple more times before. I felt like a jackass writing about it, to be honest with you.
Well, that's one of the sharp points that were brought up during our David Lynch tribute, which people can find on iTunes. I think it's on iTunes, or they can find it on our homepage at myspace.com/MovieGeeksUnited. Can bring up the archive of the David Lynch show on June 3rd that we did. Is that Lynch does have an idea of what his films mean. They make sense to him. And that's something that I was curious about. If he committed something to the final cut before it made sense to him. And apparently he doesn't. I mean, it has to make sense to him to make it into the final movie.
Yeah, but that's kind of like, you know, I mean, it doesn't really, you know, Michael Stipe, the lead singer of R.E.M., he's always said that his lyrics, they don't intentionally mean anything. He just writes them to sound good, and that's kind of always the way, because I like R.E.M., and I like David Lynch. David Lynch's movies have always reminded me of Michael Stipe's lyrics. You don't have to really understand it to enjoy it, but this is one of those situations where it's like, first of all, it's 3 hours long, so it gets very frustrating after a while. It gets
right.
Extremely frustrating. And it's like, it's like you want to like it so bad. Believe me, I love Lynch, and I love just going down that road with him wherever he's going to take me. But you really get the impression on this one more than any other movie that it is like brainstorming, that it is just kind of free flowing, and maybe it makes sense to him in a very peripheral kind of way.
Right.
But to the viewer, it's just, for me,
maddening.
Not a very enjoyable movie to sit through. Certainly not for 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame, but the second disc has half an hour of the feature-length documentary on David Lynch, and apparently it shows Lynch in a light that has never been shown before. It's pretty warts and all, and people that have seen the documentary actually are shocked that Lynch approves of it. He not only approves of it, but he's helping them market it. He tried to get distribution for it over at Cannes, I believe.
Right.
And it's really fascinating footage. It's very random and scattered. It's not any kind of linear documentary as it's shown in the bonus disc of Inland Empire. But you get a sense of his hands are in everything. He's painting. He's building sets. He's building props. He's directing actors in a very kind of sometimes a direct way, sometimes an obscure way, You also get a sense from him that he doesn't always know what he's doing. And that's what he's expressed, too, in interviews, that, you know, there are times when I, and pretty much every director, I just don't know what I'm doing. And I have to kind of free my mind and let the creativity flow to get out of that rut. And I think that's why Transcendental Meditation is so important to him as well. Because it kind of frees up his creativity. And if anyone relies on that flow, it's David Lynch.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to see it myself.
No, you should see it, but I do appreciate Chris's analysis so far, because it's you're the first person, Chris, I know that's seen it besides me. So I appreciate what you've said. Because I was, you know, I watched it back in January, and you got to remember the same weekend as Letters to Iwo Jima and Pan's Labyrinth, I saw it, and I just sort of walked out of the theater feeling like my brain had been put in a Cuisinart.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I liked what I saw, but I wrote something later that night, and I realized after I was done writing it, you know, I really had no business writing anything about that film, because I really don't know, and I still don't know what I saw for 3 hours, have a concrete grasp on it.
Yeah.
I don't even know that a second viewing would really add much to that. I mean, I really got the distinct impression that it was kind of about 30%, you know, tangible story, and about 70% just you know, Lynchian nonsense, which typically I love, but the ratio, it's not on par with something like Mulholland Drive or Wild at Heart.
Right. I didn't think it was on par with Lost Highway.
No, and actually it probably has more in common with Lost Highway than any of his other movies. That's
true.
What it felt like to me. The two movies are very, very similar. And there's some things in common with Mulholland Drive, too, thematically.
Right.
But I was really... Of course, like I said, I only watched it 20 minutes ago, so you know this sort of disappointment.
Let's get back to you in all seriousness. Get back to you and ask you on Sunday what your thoughts are.
And by that time, I would have watched it.
That's the way it is with the David Lynch movie.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a fair assumption.
Yeah. Some of his movies work a lot better for me when years pass and I give him another look. Lost Highway is like that. I didn't particularly care for Lost Highway when I first saw it. And I've grown to appreciate it over the years. And the same with Mulholland Drive. I appreciate it a lot more now than the first time I saw it. But movies like Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart, those
hit you immediately.
Those became some of my top favorite movies right after the first time I saw them. Particularly Wild at Heart, even though I think Blue Velvet is his masterpiece.
Right.
But I've seen a couple of movies myself in the past few days here on the DVD. I saw Don't Laugh, Wild Hogs.
You know, I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to send you an email. Were you like feeling depressed? Did you have razor blades with you? And were you drunk? Please tell me you were drunk.
No, I was not.
Okay.
But now I've seen the movies that they claim are responsible for the downfall of good cinema, and I think we've said it too, Norbit and Wild Hogs. I've now seen both of them.
But...
And I think that Norbit is a better movie.
Jesus Christ, man. Eddie Murphy has checks coming to you, doesn't he?
Which tells you how bad Wild Hogs is.
Well,
But enormously successful, and they're doing the sequel now, or they're about to do the scene.
Am I a bad person that I have no interest in watching this?
No. I just watched it out of curiosity. We talked about it long enough. I figured it was time that one of us watch it. It has a really appealing cast. William H. Macy is very funny when he's given something to do. Travolta is embarrassingly bad. And the others are they're there. But
they
it has
their
a
own
lot...
Thing.
Yeah,
Tim Allen does the Tim Allen thing, and Martin Lawrence does the Martin Lawrence thing.
Yeah, it has a wide, diverse demographic. You know, each one of those guys represents a different kind of demographic, and a very, very smart casting, and a very high concept for a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
All the elements were there, and it got people in the theaters, and people at large seemed to enjoy it.
People went to go see that, and they skipped Zodiac, so.
Yes, yeah. Two completely different movies.
No, I know. I just figured I just thought that was interesting.
But you said you liked Norbit better?
Yes.
You thought Norbit was the better movie?
Because I laughed out loud, I think, four times in Norbit. I laughed once in Wild Hogs.
Were you laughing at Wild Hogs because you actually rented it and you were like sort of like that kind of laugh pathetic, oh my God?
No, it was
the cover box.
It was at the cover box. It was an extremely cheap laugh. It was just a physical gag with William H. Macy, and it was just something that made me chuckle. I laughed like four good hearty laughs in Norbit, believe it or not. So, I sense disbelief amongst the two of you.
I sense disbelief because now I'm afraid you're going to go see Daddy Day Camp this weekend.
No, I'm not going to. No, I've never seen any of the Daddy Daycare movies. There's only been one other one, or has there been two of them?
No, there's a Daddy Daycare, and everyone thought I would go see that when it came out, but I actually showed willpower and didn't bother going.
Yeah, I can't spend $10 in the theater to see something that I don't think I'll get something out of.
No, I can't do it anymore. I can't.
I did see The Lookout tonight, though, and that was very good as well. Scott Frank writing and directing.
That was superb.
Directorial debut. But he's an established screenwriter, one of our best. A very good, strong little thriller. Very good.
I think that Joseph Gordon-Levitt guy is turning into... He's like the male equivalent of the 90s Parker Posey. He's like doing all.
Well, I think he's even better than that.
As far as an actor, I think you're probably right. But I mean, as far as really just sticking to doing quality independent movies,
mm-hmm.
not caring. You know, he could easily have you know bigger parts. He could easily have played, you know, for instance, a Shia LaBeouf part in Transformers. I think he probably could have been cast in that.
He was probably, I'm sure, actually sent the script. So
I'm sure he was. You know, I mean, I could see him in that role. But instead, he's not doing that. He's going everything, not everything he makes, but most of the stuff, like, consistently he's making movies like Mysterious Skin and Brick and The Lookout and really, really, exploring what he's able to do as a young actor.
Interesting movies, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's like the American equivalent, really, I have to say, of Alain Delon, and he's really like the 21st century answer to Ralph Meeker and Dick Powell. This kid's incredible. You come from Third Rock from the Sun, and the big thing you do is a Greg Araki film.
Right.
That's balls.
A really underrated movie. Too.
Oh, just incredibly, and his most accessible movie too, I may add, for Greg Araki.
Yeah, it really is probably his most accessible movie, along with Splendor, the two movies that anybody could really watch and enjoy. But
yes,
especially,
absolutely.
I was blown away by how powerful Mysterious Skin was. It had a really strong message behind it.
Oh yeah.
And incredible performance by him and the other young man in it as well, whose name I don't remember.
But I remember him, but I don't know his name, unfortunately.
They were both fantastic in it, so I would definitely recommend that movie to anybody. But also in The Lookout, you know, I wanted to say is Jeff Daniels. How exciting is it that he is having this great resurgence in his career at this point? You know,
I think it's wonderful.
Jeff Daniels is outstanding.
Yeah, I mean that and the Squid and the Whale and. He just is always good, even though his films, you know, some of the films don't always, are very below the radar, don't do well. He always brings something to his roles, even in something like a lesser Eastwood film like Bloodwork.
Right.
He is always on target.
Right. Or even something like, it's kind of silly to say it, but Dumb and Dumber, where it almost seems like the kind of part that anybody could have played alongside Jim
right.
Carrey, but he actually gets just as many laughs in that movie as Jim Carrey
oh,
does.
Oh, totally.
You watch it, you know. He's a gifted comedian and dramatic actor. Like
yeah, and he does he can handle all types of performances, all types of genres. He can play the good upstanding man like in Anaconda. Or not Anaconda, but Arachnophobia. I was thinking
oh,
of
Oh God, you really want to plug Anaconda to the last days of
your
life.
Arachnophobia, and then he could play, you know, the Hitman. What movie did he the Hitman in?
Two Days in the Valley.
Right.
And he's good in Terms of Endearment also.
Terms of Endearment is one of those good, you know, he's got flaws, but you always believe in his, you know, kind of good guy moral center.
Right.
And he's capable of doing quite a lot. He's done great work. Squid and the Whale is amazing.
Squid and the Whale is just all on all levels, just a wonderful movie.
Yeah, his performance in it though was so touching and also so funny. The more I watched that movie, like some of the scenes, like where he curses at him, he's like, "I'm cursing at myself." Like, he's so hysterical in that movie. He's got a lot of really great lines that he delivers, just with this special touch that he has. It's so original and so unique.
We've got news from Jerry close to the end of the show about an upcoming film festival that everyone out there should check out. And coming up in just a few minutes, we'll have the director of the new Jessica Alba Dane Cook film, Good Luck Chuck. And I want to tell you a little bit about the next two-hour tribute show we're planning. It's probably going to be our biggest one yet, because we're not just paying tribute to one big talent, we're paying tribute to five. This is our character actor tribute. These are guys that we're all familiar with, you know, big-time movie fans know their work backwards and forwards, I'm sure. But for the public at large, they know their faces, but the names are a little fuzzier on. They've been in every movie ever made, and they've elevated every single film they've been in. They're amazing actors. Stephen Tobolowsky, you remember him from Sneakers, The Insider, Groundhog Day. Just tons of great work. He's always so colorful and just an amazing actor. Veronica Cartwright, one of her first movies was Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. I mean, what a way to start a career. She's also been featured in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Philip Kaufman from the 70s version, the really great one. And Alien, the first Alien film, which is amazing. So she's been a part of so many landmark films, and she's also in the upcoming film, The Invasion, that opens this weekend. And we're also paying tribute to Jack Warden, great lineup of movies, All the President's Men, The Verdict. Jerry, you and I were talking about some of those films earlier.
Yeah, Used Cars, and also the Being There, though. We shouldn't... Being There is...
Being There is one of my favorite films.
Yeah, know. It's a great... You know, I was thinking about that earlier. Not because it's just about a lot of actors in it, but that's just an incredible film.
He plays the president in that film.
Yes, and it's a great... What does he say, Sean? No. He says, you're a lot bigger on the television.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sadly, he passed away last year. M. Emmett Walsh, which, you know, any Coen Brothers fan idolizes this man. He was the lead, pretty much the lead part in Blood Simple. Great actor. And he's been in tons of other movies, Raising Arizona and Clean and Sober. And
Harry and the Hendersons.
And the Hendersons, yes.
Give it up.
Come on. Yeah, that's right.
Like an Escape from Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
I had to throw that in there, sorry.
Also, J.T. Walsh, a quintessential character actor, one of our great actors. Most of the films he's been in, he was in throughout his career, he passed away in 1998, were just classics of the year they were released. Just The Negotiator, Pleasantville, the list goes on and on.
The Grifters?
The Grifters, yeah.
To Kill a Sunrise and Breakdown.
Breakdown. Great in Breakdown. Blade. What a great movie. That was one of my flick picks a couple weeks ago.
That was.
But we're paying tribute to those five character actors, and that will be on August 26th, Sunday the 26th at 6 p.m. Eastern, a two-hour show. We're confirming all of our guests for that evening as we speak, and a list of our guests should be available sometime next week, hopefully. But it's going to be a big one. We're going to commit 20 to 25 minutes with each actor, go over their careers as thoroughly as we can with people that have worked with them, or in some cases, hopefully, with the actors themselves. So it's going to be a very exciting show. We've got a couple of confirmations already, and I will, and we got quite a few no's, but, you know, you got to try. Got a letter from Philip Seymour Hoffman's camp yesterday, because he's worked with Stephen Tobolowsky in the past. And he's unavailable, but he's doing a play in London or something. And they sent a message that said, you know, your show sounds like a lot of fun. And if it were any other date, you know, we could... But so we're going after the highest profile people we can, and we're going to get some great guests for the show. 26th, two-hour tribute to our finest character actors. All right, gentlemen, our next guest is on the line and ready to go. So let's get this started. Good Luck Chuck, a new film starring Jessica Alba and Dane Cook, opens in theaters on September 21st. But ladies and gentlemen, we have the director of the film with us tonight. This marks his feature directorial debut after a long and distinguished career as a film editor. And what a resume this man has. He's edited some of the biggest action films from the past 20 years, and many of which our previous guest, the stuntman Jeff Galpin, participated in as well, including Rambo, First Blood Part 2, Predator, The Last Boy Scout, and I believe every film that's populated director Brett Ratner's resume as well, including the three Rush Hour pictures, Red Dragon, and After the Sunset. I love that movie. He's a tremendous talent, and we are truly honored to have him with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mark Helfrich. Mark, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
I'm very excited about your movie, Good Luck Chuck. The trailer is just hysterical, and I want to talk to you about it. But first, I want to get into your editing experience. You've been working in the editing field for the past 28 or so years.
Has it been that long? Wow.
According to IMDb, the source, we spoke to John Ottman last Sunday, and he is editing Valkyrie in Berlin at the moment.
He's probably going to score it, too, right?
He's scoring it as well, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And he spoke to kind of the underappreciated nature of the film editor position, partly because it's an invisible art and also because people outside of the industry don't really understand what it is. What are your thoughts on the role of a film editor?
I've always looked at film editing as the last rewrite for any feature because editors take what has been shot in all its variations, and they pick the best takes, the best performances, and then they may rearrange or delete sections to tell the story the best way they can. So it's really a very creative role, the editor, just as creative, I think, as the writer and the director and the acting.
Yeah. Now, how closely do you work with the director in the editing room? I would think that would be an essential collaboration.
Most of the films that I've edited, I'm hired prior to the production, actually shooting, and I'm there cutting right alongside from day one of shooting until about 5 months after they're done shooting when we're about finished with the film. It takes about 9 months to edit a film or finish a film from beginning to end. And so I'm there with the director all the time. He may not be in the room with me, but I'm collaborating with the director by talking on the phone or sending him stuff or stuff like that.
Now, you've worked with some of the top directors and some top-notch action films, too. Are there challenges that are specific to action films? Or is it just all the same challenge, no matter what genre you're editing?
I've been lucky enough to cut almost every genre there is, and I always approach it as a new challenge, no matter what kind of film it is, no matter what genre. There are some people who cut action better than others. I've noticed in other people's films. I've cut a lot of action, and it is a different kind of practice because you're generally using shorter bits of material. Rarely do you see a big action played out in one shot, whereas in a dialogue scene, you might want to hold on one shot for a long, you know, a minute or so or more.
Right.
Rarely is that the case with action. And so there's usually a lot more cuts per minute. But that said, editing is editing as far as I'm concerned. It's trying to tell the story the best way you can, and that's what I've tried to do with the films I've edited.
But you've edited quite a few for Brett Ratner, I think. I think most of them.
I have edited all of Brett's films.
Yeah. How did that relationship begin?
That was, I actually was brought in to meet Brett on the film Money Talks. He was hired on that film 2 weeks before they started shooting because there was another director on board prior to that. And when that director was let go, they hired Brett, and the producer had met me recently and just brought me in to meet Brett. And basically Brett auditioned to me. That's how I got the job. He showed me all of his commercials and all of his videos and said, "What do you think of that? What do you think of that?" And I said, great. And he said, "Great, okay, you're hired." So that was one of the easier interviews I've ever been on.
Well, what makes that working relationship, what makes it work so well?
Because I've been with Brett so long, we rarely have to discuss anything in depth. He trusts me. If I see something coming in daily forms and I notice something, let's say I notice something missing, I'll just call him up on the set and say, "I think you need to get a shot from above because it would, you know, we're missing that." And he won't even question it. He'll just do it. Or he'll have me go shoot it because I've shot second unit for him too. So.
Oh, wow.
And so the relationship with Brett, now we have such a shorthand, we don't even have to speak that much. I know what he wants, I know what he expects, and he knows what he can expect from me as well.
Yeah. What do you think his strengths are as a filmmaker?
I think Brett always gets what's on the page, no matter what. He may do many takes trying to get the best out of every actor that he's working with.
Mm-hmm.
He is known for doing a lot of takes, but that's because he knows in the editing I'm going to be piecing together little pieces to create a whole. And with some actors, more than others, you actually have to piece together a performance line by line.
Mm-hmm.
Some actors, you just they're so brilliant, you just let it play. And we've had both on the many films that we've done together.
That's another thing that is underappreciated about the film editor, is they really do have a hand in shaping an actor's performance.
Oh, yeah, they're the editors. I mean, they're the director. I'm sorry, let me start that over. They're the actor's best friend.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, yeah.
Or they should be. The actor should thank editors sometimes, because sometimes the performance is really brought out and made to shine in the editing.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jack Nicholson said that one time. The one guy on the film production that you need to be best friends with is the editor, because he can make or break your performance ultimately.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like for instance, with Jackie Chan, I think that the three Rush Hour movies, he's more understandable and he comes across as a better actor in the English language than any other of his English language films, simply because Brett takes the time to get him to enunciate as best as he can, and I take the time to put together piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost shocking to see Jackie on talk shows, because you can understand him on the Rush Hour films, and then on the talk shows, it's like, what is he saying? Very funny and adorable, but his English is atrocious.
Right. Right, but you're stepping behind the camera to direct your first. This is your first feature film, correct? Good Luck Chuck.
This is Good Luck Chuck is the first feature film I directed,
and it looks just hysterical. How did this opportunity come about for you?
I have been wanting to direct forever, and it took this many years to find the right script, because I'm not a writer. It took this long to find the right script to actually shoot. I got a hold of the script a few years ago and worked with the writer, Josh Stolberg, on it, and shaped it into something that I think would be hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
When I started working on the script with Josh, Good Luck Chuck was a PG type of film, sort of a Disney-esque kind of fantasy romantic comedy.
Right.
But I saw it as an R-rated romantic comedy. And this was prior to Wedding Crashers. I just wanted to do something that was more real, and where you could go further out and be funnier without fear of censorship. So that's what we've got with the final product here, is hysterical R-rated comedy.
I can't wait for it. And you've got two of the hottest young talents in the business headlining the film in Dane Cook and Jessica Alba.
Oh, yeah.
What was your experience with both of them like?
Well, Dane is fantastic. I think this is his finest role. I think people will really sit up and notice him after Good Luck Chuck, because he's a fantastic leading man for a romantic comedy, and he also gets to be crazy within,
well, that's good.
Within the confines of the story. The first half of the story, he's a sort of a normal dentist that's going through his life of never falling in love. But as this movie goes on and things get out of control, he gets to get out of control. And I think that's the Dane Cook that especially his fans have been waiting to see.
Oh, yeah. And it seems like it has a lot of great physical comedy in it as well, particularly for Jessica Alba.
Oh, yeah. Now, Jessica, this is the first comic role for her.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to do a comic role, she said, for quite some time, and she really, really asked very hard. I don't want to say beg, but she really, really wanted to do Good Luck Chuck, and we were thrilled to work with her, because I think people will find out that she is going to be the, you know, it girl to go to for romantic comedies now. She is hysterical in the film, and she does so many physical stunts.
Oh, yeah.
She and she did them and got hurt, too.
Mm.
Quite a trooper.
Yeah. Well, you've observed a series of great directors throughout your career. And when you went to direct Good Luck Chuck, what did you draw on what you'd learned throughout your film career working with some of these directors? And what surprised you most about directing?
I suppose I've absorbed certain directorial things over the years, just collaborating with different directors. So I'm sure I brought some of that to the set as a director.
Yeah.
I can't be specific as to what, but I did speak to quite a few directors who I've worked with and I admire, and they all made the impression on me to get the shot that you want. Don't compromise. Get the shot you want. And so I took that with me going into it. And believe me, filmmaking is compromise after compromise on a
yeah.
daily basis. But you have to really hold on to what you know is important. And I know I got it in this film.
Yeah. And comedy is, they say that comedy is kind of, in many ways, more difficult than drama. Did you find that to be the case?
I've always loved editing comedies. There's nothing more pleasing than going to a preview of a film that you've worked on, if it's a comedy, and have the audience laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that feeling, and I think I know what will make an audience laugh, just because I've edited so many comedies. I mean, probably one of the funniest was the first Scary Movie that I edited.
Oh, yeah.
And that was had so many laughs per minute, it was a real learning experience for me, and I wanted as many laughs per minute as I could get in Good Luck Chuck, too. So if we were having a good time on the set and it made me laugh while I was directing it, I felt good about the finished product,
yeah.
even while I was making it. So I just went with my instincts.
So the film comes out September 21st, correct?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, we can't wait to see it.
I promise it will be hysterical. I mean, it's got things you won't believe in it.
Well, we can imagine. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We can't wait for your film, and please come back to us sometime in the near future if you can.
Thank you.
Happy to. Thank you so much for interviewing me.
Thank you. You have a great evening now. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That's Mark Helfrich. He's the director of Good Luck Chuck with Dane Cook and Jessica Alba. It's going to be a big movie, it looks very funny. There's a red band trailer. That means a naughty trailer for the film on our blog right now. So check that out. It does look like a hysterical film. And I hope to see a lot more work from him in the future as a director.
Yeah. He seems to be the right guy to put behind the camera, like you're saying, because he knows what works. I mean,
yeah. So, Jerry, tell us about this upcoming film festival.
Well, it's tomorrow night. I've been, pimping it in bulletins and on the blogs, but our old friend Paul Bassetti, who was on here a couple months ago, who is the producer of our friend Colin's film, who was on here, and they're having their second annual Old Town Theater Film Festival. It's a series of short films from the D.C. metro area. And his film, Paul's film, Antidote 7, will be featured among several others. And $10 gets you to see 12 films. It's a pretty good deal. If you're in the Virginia, D.C. area, you should go check it out. Doors open at 7 o'clock. I went last year. It was a lot of fun. I'm not going to do it this year, but it's if you're in the area, it's a good time.
Well, we'll make sure to check that out. I live in Florida. But
yeah, I know. I was going to say, you might want to take a shuttle up or something.
Yes, that'll be good.
Yeah.
Anybody have exciting weekend plans, or what? The Invasion opens this weekend.
Superbad opens too.
That's true. Are you going to check both of those out?
I am going to check both of those out, no doubt.
Chris, what about you?
I've got a pretty busy weekend. I'm going to a comedy club on Friday night. I've got free tickets to a comedy club, so I'm going to go do that. But I definitely want to see both of those movies, Invasion and Superbad. They both look really good in their own way, so hopefully I'll get a chance to do that.
Yeah. Who are you going to see at the comedy club?
I'm going to see a guy named Ted Alexandro. I don't know if you are familiar with him.
No, I'm not.
He's had a special on Comedy Central. They've featured him a couple times. Really, really funny. He just toured with a comedian named Todd Barry recently, and he's extremely, extremely funny. Kind of like a Jerry Seinfeld type humor, observational humor. He's really got this distinct delivery, though. It's very, very funny. I think he's from Long Island or something like that.
Right.
Really, really hilarious guy. So I'm excited. It was free. Six free tickets. So
no, you can't beat that.
Yeah, no, I know. All of a sudden, I just got called up. Hey, come to our show for free. So I was like, yes, please.
Speaking of like top-notch comedians, I mean, Dane Cook is really popular now as a stand-up. I know I've seen some of his stand-up on television, but he's yet to find that movie that kind of uses that energy that he has.
True.
So it looks like Good Luck Chuck is the one to do it. Just a couple of notes. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. You can search Movie Geeks United in the iTunes search engine, or just click on the subscribe to iTunes icon on the right-hand side of this Blog Talk Radio page. And we are available at blogtalkradio.com/MovieGeeksUnited. If you want to send us an email, any ideas for future shows or any suggestions, just send it to moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com. That's our email, and we will get right back to you. And this Sunday, we have another exciting show. We're going to talk about the art of screenwriting and, more importantly, how to be a working screenwriter. With a very special guest, the author of a new book called The Working Screenwriter. We're also going to cover film criticism with a great writer who's interviewed the biggest film critics currently working today, both critics from Entertainment Weekly, the Lisa Schwartzbaum and Owen Lieberman and many, many others. So we're going to talk about screenwriting and film criticism all on Sunday. That should be an exciting show, so just... our number is 718-508-9477. Mark it down and give us a call Sunday if you have any questions about either of those two topics. Guys, it's been a great show, and we're all done.
All right.
We are. Wait, we're all done?
Yes, sadly.
Okay, I didn't know you wanted to, okay.
Do we have something else we want to talk about?
Well, I mean, you've seen a lot, well, besides The Lookout, what else have you seen? And Wild Hogs. Have you seen other things, or are those the two that you've...
Unfortunately, it all ends there. I mean, I have Fracture, and I have Vacancy, and Inland Empire that I'm going to...
Oh, wow, you've got a full slate ahead of you. You're not going to the movies this weekend. You're going to be at home.
I need to. I'm so behind on my actual theater going. I've seen Bourne Ultimatum. I haven't seen any of those, so I'm way behind.
But you got Inland Empire, so you're not going anywhere. oh, man.
Yeah. So, okay. everybody, thanks for listening so much. And, guys, I will see you on Sunday for another great episode.
Yes, definitely.
And we thank everyone out there for listening. Great guest tonight, great conversation. We thank everyone for listening in tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.